The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter number 2, text number 13. Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari. Recorded on September 28th, 2017, in Noida, India.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you all very much for coming tonight. I'm really surprised. I thought we have a little program in somebody's apartment. Have a whole auditorium here. This is really nice. This is a nice facility your apartment has made, you know, for these programs. Very nice. Every apartment building should have such a place like this so we can come and give programs. So tonight we're going to study from the ancient wisdom of India, actually the ancient wisdom of Krishna. Indian culture means Krishna culture. Krishna is the whole basis of Indian culture, actually. Bhagavad Gita is the whole basis of Indian culture, and it's spoken by Lord Krishna 5,000 years ago. Tonight we're going to read from chapter 2, text number 13 of Bhagavad Gita. Dehino sminyata dehe kumaram javanam jara tata dehantara praptir dirastata namuhiyati. Translation. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes to another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. So, it's a very important point here to understand. The first point of actual philosophy for a human being is understand I'm not this body. Any philosophy which is not based on I am not this body is actually not really philosophy. It's ignorance. Because it's very clear, see, am I the little baby's body? No. Am I the young teenage body? No. Am I in the middle-aged man's body? No. I'm in the old man's body? No. I'm not any of these things. It's like you put on a shirt, you take it off. Is that shirt you because you're wearing it? No. So this body is like a garment. You put on different garments at different stages of your life, that's all. So when the body is finished, you are not finished. This is the most important thing. One has to understand one's transcendental identity beyond the material body. The difficulty is our modern-day civilization is based on the erroneous principle that I am this body. Or they say, well, you're a boy or a girl. You have to mark down, when you fill out a questionnaire, you put male or female. I am male or I'm female. But are you male or female? No. You see, your covering is male or female, that's all. So we have to understand that distinction. Because as long as you think that you're the material body, you are setting yourself up for a big, big anxiety, the time of death. If your whole concept of your identity is that flesh and blood, and then when it's taken away from you, it's absolute devastation on the self. It's horrible. Death is a horrible experience for most people because they've misidentified with their material body throughout their entire lives. You see? So the Vedic culture trains people from the very beginning. Actually, at the age of 5, the brahmachari, he goes to Guru Kula, the ashram of the spiritual master. He is trained from the age of 5 in this knowledge. You see? That I'm not my body. I'm an eternal spiritual being, qualitatively one with God. If one has that knowledge, I'm not this material body, I'm actually a spiritual being, qualitatively one with God, you see. And you live your life in terms of that reality, which is the reality, then you have a life free of anxiety. Even if you become sick or diseased, you know it's not you. It's like tonight, I caught a bad something, bronchitis or something. I'm sick. Today I've been very sick, but actually I'm not sick. Only the body is sick. So that knowledge, I'm not this body, is very liberating knowledge. And that knowledge is essential in the human civilization. Because any civilization which is based on the false concept of I am this body, you see, that leads one into darkness and despair. I am Indian, I'm American, I'm Russian. We're not any of these things. We are eternal spiritual beings, qualitatively one with the Supreme. So there is a Supreme. There is a Supreme. The atheists want to tell us there is no Supreme. But actually there has to be a Supreme. Supreme means topmost. You say there is no Supreme, that means everyone's equal. The position of the Supreme is measured by six opulences: power, beauty, renunciation, knowledge, wealth, and fame. That's how you measure opulence. Someone is powerful, they're wealthy, this way, knowledgeable, you see. So does everybody have the same amount of money in their bank account? No. Does everybody have the same amount of power? No. The same amount of beauty? No. The same amount of renunciation? No. You see. And these six opulences, power, beauty, renunciation, knowledge, wealth, and fame, everybody has a different amount. I mean, somewhere there's a person who has more of these things. Because we don't have equal of these things. That person, there must be such a person who exceeds all others in power, beauty, renunciation, knowledge, wealth, and fame. This is pure logic. There must be a person, and that person is the Supreme. Or as we say in English, God, Ishvar, Bhagavan. In Sanskrit, Bhagavan, one who possesses all, one who is full of all opulences. Bhaga is opulences, van is possessors. Bhagavan, that who possesses all these opulences. So, well, who is that person? Well, who has more wealth? Who has more power? Who has more beauty? We can study in all the great personalities of history and compare them. If you analyze very carefully all the great personalities of history, you can even throw yourself in if you wanted to. Well, maybe I'm God. I'll put myself into the comparison list. So if you actually carefully analyze and study from all the great personalities, all the personalities, who has more power, who has more beauty, who has renunciation, who has more knowledge, who has more wealth and fame, guess who wins? Krishna. Krishna wins. You may say, well, how has Krishna renounced? He had all those girlfriends in Vrindavan. How you can say he's renounced? Well, Krishna had no sexual relationships with any of those girls, you know. He was strict brahmachari. And actually, you know, grandfather Bhishma, he is accepted as the greatest renunciant, because he said, I will never marry. Because of that, his father gave him the benediction that unless you want to die, you will not die. He had that boon. Even when he was lying on a bed of arrows, that did not kill him. He only died because he wanted to die. Bhishma Dev is accepted as the greatest renunciate. But he said, if I was in the forest with all those young gopi girls, I would have fallen down for brahmachari. So Krishna is more renounced than me. So even in renunciation, you see, Krishna is the Supreme. Power, beauty, renunciation, knowledge, wealth, and fame. Of course, Krishna has as many expansions, Ram, Nrsimha, you see. Krishna has innumerable expansions. They're also God, Supreme. So some like to worship Ram, you see, that's okay. Nrsimha, that's okay. But Krishna, if you look in Srimad Bhagavatam, the relationship with Krishna, between Krishna and Ram and Narayan, all the other forms, It's described very clearly in Bhagavatam. Krishnastu Bhagavan Svayam. Svayam means original. The original form of God, that is Krishna. So if you're worshipping Krishna, you're automatically worshipping Rama, Anushringa, Narayan, etc. Vamana, etc. Because they're all extensions of Krishna. When you water the root of the tree, all the leaves and branches are nourished. And it goes even further than that. Because everything that exists, according to Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, Aham Sravasya Prabhava Matak Sravam Pravartate, Krishna says, I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. Wow, that's pretty amazing, huh? Do you realize this auditorium we're sitting in, this is an emanation from Krishna? This is Krishna's energy. This microphone, your body, your very self, your mind, your intelligence, your very self, the Atma. You are Atma. That very Atma is an emanation from Krishna. Everything that exists is an emanation from Krishna. So, therefore, when you reconnect with Krishna, you're plugged in. It's like this is a very nice microphone, you see. But if you don't plug it in, it has no value. You understand? It has no value. It has no use if it's not plugged in. So right now, because we're not plugged into Krishna, the source of all the energy, you see, the powerhouse is there, generating electrical energy. So for the electrical items to be useful, they have to be connected with the powerhouse. So in a similar way, for anything to be useful, properly utilized, it has to be plugged into the powerhouse. Krishna is the ultimate powerhouse of everything, according to Bhagavad Gita philosophy. So when you connect with Krishna, you become empowered. You're turned on, you see. It's like we have a saying, tune in, turn on, and bliss out. When you actually reconnect with Krishna, now you're actually turned on, you're actually alive. You may say, I'm already alive and I'm not tuned into Krishna. Well, you don't know what it means to be alive yet. When you actually tune into Krishna, then you'll actually understand what it really means to be alive. You were thinking you were alive, but now when you tune in, when you connect with Krishna, then you know you're really alive, you see. I remember as a young spiritual seeker back in 1968 in Denver, Colorado, USA. I was looking for spiritual enlightenment. And in one library, I came across a book called Bhagavad Gita. And I checked out that book from the library. And in that book, Krishna says, Bhaktam pushpam palam tayam yo me bhakta payachtati tadaham. This way, he says, if you will offer me a leaf, a flower, fruit or water, I will accept it. That amazed me. I grew up as a Christian and we never thought you could offer something to God and he would accept it. He was too far away on some big mountain somewhere, millions of miles away, you see. But now, here you can actually directly approach God. You can give him a leaf, flower, fruit or water. So I started offering all my food. I had a vegetarian diet. I offer all my food to Krishna before I would eat. And it was an amazing experience. You could try that at home. No meat, fish, eggs, onions, or garlic. That Krishna doesn't accept. They are tamasic. But if you offer him your vegetarian food, make a nice plate for Krishna, you see, get a special plate in the silver shop. It's only for Krishna. And before you eat, you offer. I'll put all the preparations, make a nice plate for Krishna. You feed him first. Before you feed your kids or your husband, you see, first feed Krishna. Give him a few minutes to enjoy his breakfast, his lunch, or his dinner, you see. And then you transfer that food back onto the plates or into a cooking pot. And wash Krishna's plate nicely and put it away, and then you take your prasadam. You'll be amazed how this will transform your consciousness. if you will make a rule in your house, only Krishna Prasadam will we eat, you'll be absolutely amazed. You will not be living in Noida. You'll be living in the spiritual sky. Your apartment will turn into a spiritual planet. You'll feel the difference. It's amazing. By eating such food that's been offered to Krishna with love, you will turn on your spiritual identity, the identity of your wife, your kids. Everybody becomes spiritualized just by eating such food. It's called prasadam, the mercy of Krishna. You don't have to go to only the temple to get prasadam. You can have prasadam at home also. In Vedic culture, every home was a temple. Let's bring Vedic culture back to India. Make every home a temple in India. Let every home be a temple now. That's my proposition for India. Now you make every home as a temple. You see. And you also go to the temple. We have our ISKCON temple here. But you make your home a temple. So every morning, you ring the bell, you have the aarti. You see. You make your home into a temple. In the evening also. Before going to work and coming home from work, the aarti is there, you see. The kirtan is there. The offering of prasadam is there. In this way, your life will become absolutely blissful. You don't believe me? Just try it. You see, if an American can do this, certainly an Indian can do it, right? An American can do this. And we have some Danish boys here, too. They're doing it, you see. If the Danes and the Americans can do, and the Bulgarians, you see. If we all can follow Vedic culture, why the Indians can't follow Vedic culture? Isn't that crazy? Also, we have an Estonian here as well. Ishvara Paramadas, my disciple from Estonia. It's absolutely insane if the Estonians, the Americans, the Bulgarians, the Danes, if we can all do this and the Indians can't do it, what kind of nonsense is that? This is your culture. And we're coming to teach you your culture. But what can we do, you know? I was fortunate to have a modified spiritual master, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We want to make a revolution in India. You see, your country, do you know your country ruled the whole world 5,000 years ago? Maharaj Yudhisthira, he was the king of the whole planet Earth. Do you know that? Your India ruled the whole world. The capital of the world was Hastinapur, not Washington, D.C. You had the world capital here in India. And because you gave up your Vedic culture, India has fallen down. See? Because you gave up your Vedic culture. So now if you again take up your Vedic culture, again you'll become the leader of this planet. Educationally, politically, everything, India will become the leading nation in this world if you will take up Krishna consciousness very seriously. So I'm telling all of you Indian people now, you take up Krishna consciousness very seriously and your country will become the world leader once again as it was 5,000 years ago. I don't know whether you do it or not, it's up to you. I can't force you. But I can tell you, if you don't do it, you're a bunch of fools. That's all I can say. Sorry to be a little rude, but if you don't do it, you're fools. That's all. Mudha. Like ass. You see. Just give me technology, you know. Engineering, computer science. That's ass mentality. If you want real knowledge, you want real education, you study Vedas. That is a source of real knowledge. This mundane education, every few years they completely rewrite the textbooks, you see. You become expert in some computer language, but then they have a new language. It's like when I went to computer school, we studied COBOL, you see. How much is COBOL used nowadays? Maybe a few old places. And, you know, now it's, I don't know what they have, C++++ or something. It's always changing, you see. You can use that for a livelihood, we have no objection. But you have to understand that is simply external. The actual spiritual identity, if you don't study the Vedic wisdom and practice the Vedic wisdom, what is good of your engineering and your computer science? There's no value. Simply decorations for a dead body and so on. So now you take this very seriously, make your life perfect, and we can ask if there's some questions now. My wife is also here. I don't know why she didn't come up. She's a little shy, but they have a chair for her here. But we will. I'll also ask her to answer some of these questions that are coming in. She's really being a little shy tonight. But ladies do that sometimes. They're shy, you know. She's a very powerful preacher. Actually, she's a heavier preacher than me. Okay, flashlight. There we go. How to strive or stick. Yeah, how to stick to Krishna thought. I go into the material world and I get dirty and carried away. The thing is, if you get up every morning and have a nice sadhana, you can offer the arati. And then when you have time, you go to the ISKCON temple, you see, where they have very proper worship going on. But you have to have it's called the sandwich program, you see. You have morning, you have sadhana, and you have sadhana in the evening. And then your day's activity, that's a sandwich in the middle. So if you will get this japa mala, they have it at the ISKCON center, you get that japa mala, and every day you do the japa mala. Just like the initiated disciple of Prabhupada, we chant at least 16 rounds of japa mala every day. Whether you're a full-time preacher like me, or we have most of our devotees are businessmen or computer experts, they have all lawyers, we have all kinds of occupations, entrepreneurs, we have all kinds of disciples doing all kinds of things for livelihood. They all chant 16 rounds, you see. If you chant 16 rounds of japa mala every day, that will carry you through the day, but even when you go to work, you can remember, this office is actually the energy of Krishna. Is the whole universe a puppet of God? If yes, what is the need of universe? If not, what is a human being? A human being role in their life? The actual existence is the spiritual world. That's where we actually belong, where there's no birth, no death, no old age, no disease. But if one becomes rebellious against the supremacy of the Lord, he's put into a place called the material world to reform him of that envious attitude. So this is the prison. This is God's prison house. This is the prison house of God's kingdom, this material world. That's what it's here to reform us and bring us back to our original identities in the pastimes of the Lord. Do we need to ask anything from God? Actually, that's an interesting question. Do I have to ask him for my food? Just like the Christians pray, "Dear God, please give us this day our daily bread." Now, when you were a child growing up in your parents' house, did you ever have to say, "Mommy and Daddy, will you please feed me today?" Who had to do that? Anyone, raise your hand if you had to ask your parents for food when you were growing up in the house. Or if you're a parent, do your kids have to ask you for food? No. You feed them because you love them, you see. So you think God doesn't love us? And we have to beg food from God? No. This idea of saying, "Dear God, give us our daily bread," is a foolish prayer, actually. It's a prayer of someone who doesn't actually understand God. God actually provides everything, but there's one thing we do need to ask from God, and my dear Lord, please bless me. I can master the art of loving you fully with my every thought, my every word, my every deed in all times, places, and circumstances. Please bless me. I can learn how to love you. That, if your kids said, "Mommy and Daddy, please tell me how I can serve you in the most wonderful, loving way," wouldn't you love them? "Mommy and Daddy, please tell me how I can serve you and love you in the best possible way." You'd be so happy if your kids asked you that. You see, "Oh, Daddy, you're so kind to me. How can I serve you and please you in the best way?" You see, so that's how we should pray to God. Yes. Give microphone to Guru Mata. Okay, we have a mic for her. Move the amplifier for her. Move the amp.
Guru Mataji, is saying, why do we pick on Christians when Hindus also go to the temples to ask for food?
Why we pick on Christians when the Hindus are doing the same thing? Actually, that reminds me of that song, you know. Give me a Cadillac, a brand new Cadillac, replete with Michelin tires. Give my wife a new silk sari, give my kids a Harvard education, give me a house by the sea. Om Jaya Jagadish Hari. You see? Actually, we do the Hindus, every religion, I'm not picking on Hindus, but Hindus, Muslims, Christians, Jews, everyone prays for material things. But we Vaishnavas, you see, we know that is stupid. You don't go to God and ask for material things. They're coming anyway. You go to God and ask, my dear Lord, please bless me, I can love you perfectly. That will make your life happy. Otherwise, you're asking God to serve you. We are meant to serve Him. We're not asking Him to serve us. If I ask Him to serve me, that means I think I'm superior to Him and He's under me. You see, that's an offense. We pray to God, please bless me and I can serve you. In fact, this Hare Krishna mantra means, my dear Lord, please engage me in your service. Okay. What is more powerful, karma or dharma? Dharma. Karma will keep you, karma is also powerful. Karma will keep you locked up in the cycle of birth and death. But you engage in akarma, you see. That bhakti is akarma. Dharma is akarma. When you engage in akarma or bhakti or dharma, you see, that liberates you. So the most powerful thing is akarma, dharma. It's more powerful than karma. How do we know our karma is in sync or in line with our dharma? Of course, karma also means activities. Another way of using the term. All your activities, Krishna says, yat karoshi yadashnasi yajdahosi dadasi yat yat tapashashi kuntayo tat karishvam madarpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, as well as whatever austerities you may perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering unto me. So if you make all of your activities as an offering to Krishna, you are following his order given in the Bhagavad Gita, and that will in fact liberate you. How do we know it will be the Diksha Guru? Well, Diksha Guru means one who is... Guru means, now Guru has become very cheap thing. They have computer guru, this guru, that guru. You see, guru means one who teaches you the science of God. That is actual guru. Otherwise, he's lagu. The Sanskrit word guru means heavy. He is heavy with knowledge, you see. Lagu means light. It's flaky, you see. The guru is one who is heavy with knowledge, who actually understands what is the absolute truth and teaches you how to live in perfect harmony with that absolute truth. That is guru. So, there are just like in our ISKCON, we have many gurus who are all teaching them. So, you hear the, you, of course, when I joined ISKCON, we only had one guru, and that was Prabhupada, so we all became his disciples. But now we have many gurus preaching here in India and all over the world. So, you hear from, you can choose which guru you want. It's like a super, like a shopping mall now. You go to this guru, that guru. But you can hear the different gurus of ISKCON. And they're all bona fide gurus, you see. Which one would I like? So I have, some people choose me, some people choose my godbrothers, and that's okay. Whoever inspires you the most, you can become their disciple. Like I have about 250 disciples. They've chosen me as their spiritual master because they feel the most inspired by me. So you can choose whichever guru you like for their movement. They're all teaching the same philosophy, but who inspires you the most, that's your choice. How we both will meet. Actually, that's an interesting question. When you're actually ready for the guru, Krishna will send him to you. When you're actually serious now, I want to surrender to God, then Krishna will send the guru to you, and you realize, ah, now I have found my spiritual master. So you simply have to be serious to become perfect in spiritual life, and when you have that seriousness, then you will see how Krishna has sent your guru to you. Can you explain how everything is not one? Okay, that's pretty easy. How everything is not one. On this wrist I have a watch, on this wrist I don't. If it was all one, I'd have a watch on both wrists, isn't it? I mean, it's so obvious. Everything was one. He wouldn't have the distinctions and differentiations. Now, as a matter of philosophy, however, in Vaishnava philosophy, we understand the oneness and the duality simultaneously, because everything is the energy of God. In that sense, it's all one, because God and His energy are also one, because He's simply like just like when the sun comes up in the morning, you say, "Ah, the sun has come." But only the sunshine came. If it was the sun, you'd be burned to a crisp. You're in your bedroom and the sunshine comes in, you say, "Oh, look, the sun has come." But if that's the sunshine. If it was the sun planet, you'd be dead. You'd be fried to a crisp, you see. So the sun and the sunshine are one in one sense, and they're also different. So everything is the energy of God, so in one sense everything is one. But within that energy there are so many distinctions. So therefore, our Vaishnava philosophy is the perfection of philosophy, achincha beda beda tattva, the absolute truth is simultaneously, inconceivably, one and different. Hindi bolo nahi. Write in English, Angrezi bolo, Hindi bolo nahi. You can answer that. This one is, why are you speaking in English? And where are you from? Actually, I'm originally from the spiritual world. I'm one of Krishna's associates in the spiritual sky. And that's where I'm originally from. After many births in this material world, I came to realize who I actually am, and one of Krishna's associates in his transcendental pastime. I'm speaking in English because I grew up in America, and they didn't teach us Hindi over there. All I did learn a little Spanish, you know. Hable español. Poquito español. And a little Hindi. Hindi bolo nahi. I know that much Hindi. But that's, you know, it's my language. I grew up in America, all-American kid, you know. Went through the American educational system. And, you know, the Americans are pretty puffed up. They think they're the leaders of the whole world, so why learn somebody else's language? They should all learn English. That's the move. So there, Guru Mata has something. Nothing? What did she say?
Whole world is speaking English.
Yeah, the whole world is speaking English. Why have learned a foreign language? I come here, you're all speaking English. Practically, every, you know, all the educated people in India speak English. I travel all over the world. I just give lectures in English. There's always somebody who can translate to the local language. So why bother learning a foreign language? I can focus on memorizing shlokas from Bhagavad Gita instead of learning a new language. There's so many advertisements in English. Even I go to Europe. Even in European countries where they, you know, or Latvia or Lithuania, they have advertisements in English. English is considered the cool language. Advertisements, even in Latvia and Lithuania and Estonia, you go down the street, you see billboards in English because that's considered really cool if it's English. Also in your Denmark as well, the same thing. Oh, the English, it's an English ad, or it's really, it must be a good product if they're advertising in English. Actually, Prabhupada's spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, said, "You preach this message in English language." You see, that right now in history of the world, English is the predominant language in the world. It's a fact. So if you preach in English language, you have the widest possible audience. Okay? Okay. Why did God create four Vishnu, four Varnas, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Brahman, Shudra? The Varnas are there to organize the society. Just like why in your body do you have legs, belly, arms, and head? You see? The natural division of labor within your body. So just as your body functions with four divisions, the legs, the belly, the arms, and the head, the social body also functions with these four varnas, the Brahmins, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. The natural thing. Okay? The mind is always wandering and searching for true happiness, how to control this. If you'll chant Hare Krishna, your mind will become perfectly controlled. When I recite mantras, I think of God. I sit in meditation. I go through two stages at different times. I cry a lot, sometimes hysterically. Then I am lost in bliss and can't do any job or mantra. These are strong sensations at the crown of my head or throughout the spinal column. Is this strong surge of energy resting in my body? How do I reconcile? You have to go beyond your body. To have bodily symptoms, it's not you. You have, if you really want transcendental meditation, you have to go beyond the sensations in your body. You see, you may have some bodily sensations, but you have to go beyond those to actually, because you're not your body. You see, so when you, the real thing is, you have to get out of your body when you meditate. As long as you're, well, I'm having this bodily sensation, you're still in the body. You haven't perfected your meditation. If you would just focus on the mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, then you can actually have an out-of-the-body experience, which is the perfection of meditation. Yeah. How to not waver from chanting and following religious principles. If you accept a spiritual master, that will make you very strong, you see. If you have guru, you take vrata. That guru Maharaj, I now promise you, I will always chant 16 mantras every day, at least. I will strictly avoid illicit sex, meeting, intoxication, and gambling. Just like your marriage vow, you see, makes you steady. You don't run after women anymore because now you're married. It regulates you. Marriage vow regulates you. So in the same way, initiation vow regulates you. But now I have one business only. I serve my guru Maharaj. And that way I become fixed. Okay, what if I want to completely become a devotee of Krishna, leaving my family and all? There's an interesting story in this connection. Lord Chaitanya, you know, during the Chachamacha, the rainy season, the sages who wander about, I don't know if they're still doing, but formerly, the sages would wander. They wouldn't have any place of residence. They're always wandering. But during the Chaturmasa, they would stay in one place. So Lord Chaitanya, this is 500 years ago. So Lord Chaitanya, he stayed with one Brahmin named Kurma during the Chaturmasa. So God, actually, Lord Chaitanya is God himself in the form of his devotee. So you can imagine having God himself in your house for 4 months. He was really, when it was time for the Chachamashi was over, it was time for Lord Chaitanya to leave. He's saying, "My Lord, I cannot tolerate your separation. I will leave my family and come with you." And he said, "No." Lord Chaitanya said, "No." He said, "Jari dekatari kaha Krishna upadashamaya gai guru hoyutari desh," in Bengali language. He said, "No, you stay here in your house. And whomever you meet, you instruct him in the teachings of Krishna. And this may be my order. You become guru and deliver the people of this country." So, there's no reason for you to leave your house. This is like sometimes when someone told me, when sannyasi said, when are you going to give up your wife and become a sannyasi? And I asked another sannyasi, he said, actually, by staying together with a Krishna conscious wife, you're better than sannyasi. So there's no reason for you to take sannyasi. You're more than sannyasi. You see. So, you don't have to give up your wife to be a pure devotee of Krishna. You and your wife work together as a team to serve Krishna and make your children Krishna conscious and show an ideal household life that all the other householders can follow. So you become a preacher, that's all. You don't have to become give up your home. I don't find any purpose in my life. Well, the purpose of your life is to become a pure devotee of Krishna. And I will teach you how to do that if you want to take my instructions. You can go to my e-course and sign up. It's very simple. Joincourse.com. www.joincourse. JOINCOURSE.com. Join my course and I will train you how to become a liberated soul. You sign up, you get something every day. You get the thought for the day, you'll get sample questions and answers, you get a video for the day also. I'll give you plenty of material to train you how to become a pure devotee of Krishna. Why is it so difficult to practically apply our theoretical knowledge? Is there a lack of faith in that knowledge? Actually, it's not difficult, but we think it's difficult. That's our stupidity. Is it difficult for a fish to swim in the water? No. It's difficult for him to flap on the beach in agony. When he's in the water, it's a very simple thing. So actually, it's very simple to become a pure devotee of Krishna. You just have to put yourself back in the atmosphere, the spiritual atmosphere. Having a guru, shelter of a guru, in the association of Vaishnavas. If you do those two things, it's very easy to become Krishna conscious. You just got to get back in the water, that's all. As the youth strikes, there is always some or other constant source of negativity attracting towards it, which overpowers the positive energy. How to control it? You try to be positive most of the time. Why most of the time? You should be positive all the time. Why most of the time? You should be positive all the time by seeing everything that comes to you as the blessings of Krishna to help you come back to Him as soon as possible. A Vaishnava has no bad experience. He sees everything as the special blessings of Krishna upon him to help him come closer and closer to God every day. You see. So there's no bad thing for him. The so-called bad thing, it's not bad. In fact, Kunti Devi, you know Kunti Devi in our Vedas. She was, Krishna was staying with the palace. Actually, you know, they were in the forest for many years. In exile for 13 years. It was very difficult for a woman to be in exile with no home. Her sons took care of her, but it was very difficult for a woman to be living with no home in the forest, sleeping. Rakshasas are there, man-eating rakshasas. Can you imagine living in the forest with man-eating rakshasas? How terrifying that would be for a woman. So she went through all kinds of hell. And the whole ordeal was finally over, and now Krishna is visiting their palace in Hastinapur. They have Krishna as their house guest. But now Krishna is time to go back to Dwarka, his home in Dwarka. So she's saying, oh, Krishna. What is it? Vipadashantatashvatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatat in the forest, I was always taking shelter of you to protect me, you see. That I was in the forest, and all those years of being tortured in so many ways, I was always taking shelter of you very intensely. And that was actually very wonderful. So when Krishna was leaving, she said, let those calamities come again and again. Because when they come, I can do nothing but intensely take shelter of you and see you within my heart. And when I see you, I no longer see birth and death. So for a devotee, actually, there's no such thing as a difficulty. For him, a difficulty is the greatest blessing because it enables him to intensely take shelter of his beloved Lord Krishna. So Kunti was praying for more difficulties. Actually, it happened to me recently. I came down with a very bad problem in my back. I was in so much pain. It's called sciatica. Maybe you've heard of it. a pinched nerve. The sciatic nerve was badly pinched by a disc that went out of, that was protruding out of my spine. It was so much pain, I felt like dying, actually. It was horrible pain. It was very difficult for me psychologically. But when I remembered Queen Kunti, and I said, Krishna, please give me more difficulties. And then immediately, the problem, all my distress was gone. I said, Krishna, please give me more difficulties. So whenever you find yourself in a difficult situation, you find it intolerable, just ask Krishna for more difficulties. You say, well, I can't do that. But sure you can. Just try it. My disciple in Austin, he said, oh, Gurudev, I can't do that. But actually, anyone can do that. I guarantee you, when you ask for more difficulties, your difficulties will disappear. They all evaporate. You'll see everything is Krishna's mercy. So I encourage you to do that when you're in difficulty. Just beg Krishna for more difficulties. And you realize, actually, this is not a difficulty. This is a blessing. It's helping me to take more shelter of my beloved Krishna. Yeah. How do we achieve happiness? But just pure happiness. Pure happiness, you see, there's two kinds of happiness. There's sukham, which is normal happiness. You know, I got a raise in my job, or I'm having a nice dinner, you know, or I just got married, my wife is very beautiful, or, you know, whatever. Material happiness, right? But that happiness comes and goes. It's up and down, up and down. Don't depend on material happiness for your happiness. If you do so, you will be disappointed, especially with death. You find susukam, the happiness of taking shelter of Krishna. You see, that happiness will never let you down. That is more happy than any material happiness. Material happiness is called chanchala, or flickering. Sometimes here, sometimes not here. You see, heat and cold, happiness and distress, they're always bouncing back and forth. But if you take shelter of Krishna, you will always be happy in all circumstances. Looks like our questions are up, and we've been talking for quite a while. We've been going on for almost an hour now. So perhaps we can do something else now. What's happening? So we thank you all very much, and remember to please sign up for my e-course as soon as you get to your computer or your smartphone. Join www.joincourse.com, joincourse.com. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.